And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Cody.
My name's Cody. I'm an alcoholic. First, I'd like to thank Zach and Kendall for asking me to speak, allowing me to come up here, opening the doors over the last year. They've done a great job. And they're great icons in my sobriety, and I really appreciate them. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. The newcomers, I hope you hear something that keeps you coming back. I want to thank all of my brothers and sisters from the Goes to Any Length group of Alcoholics Anonymous, my home group. I want to thank God, because without Him, I wouldn't be here today. He set down the path that I couldn't see. And I'd like to thank my sponsor for patiently guiding me over the last year and a half through the steps. Let's see. I guess let's start from the beginning. I think I've always been an alcoholic. Even before I took a first drink. I was born to, I want to say alcoholic parents. I think it definitely runs on my father's side of the family. Mental illness on my mother's side. Not heavily, you know, but it was definitely there. Regardless, I had alcoholic tendencies from, you know, as long as I could remember. A lot of things happened in my childhood that I believe helped perpetuate my alcoholism. I had very severe asthma growing up. I was always hospitalized, always in and out of the hospital. I had a speech impediment, so I was always, you know, made fun of, always, you know, fueled that feeling indifference that I always felt inside. Had long hair, thought I was a little punk rocker growing up, and you know, definitely got teased because of that. And like I said, even before alcohol, I was addicted to adrenaline. My parents got us a dirt bike growing up, and I loved to ride that thing just everywhere, just wide open, as fast as I could go. And then when I was 9 years old, had a pretty horrific accident, and mangled my right leg pretty good. It's still to this day about an inch longer. And like I said, my even before I drank, well, my first drunk wasn't until I was 15. But before that, I mean, I was probably 4 or 5, still in sips of my dad's brandy or his beer. I loved my mom's white Russians. It was like candy to me. It was always like a game, though, still in the sip, you know, and then they'd always get mad at me. But my my middle brother, he gave me my first drunk. And all that indifference, all that not feeling a part of that I felt growing up, it was just instantly gone. I could dance, I could, you know, I felt at home. The only time I've ever felt that way was being in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so once I had that first drink, I pretty much just chased that feeling. Got introduced to drugs too, so that's definitely part of my story. And like I said, I always chased this feeling of like a spiritual awakening is almost what I felt I was having. But the more I tried to consume, the more that I tried to do to get to some place, it just took me further and further away from God. So when I was 19, I got my first DUI. That was the first real sort of trouble I ever got into. And it was really, really devastating to me. Didn't talk a lot about it, kept it from a lot of my friends. And everybody just kind of told me, you know, you're probably just drinking too much, you know, you're just partying too much, not realizing how bad my alcoholism was. I just continued on drinking, never thinking that was ever part of the problem. Let me share here a little bit. Men and women essentially drink because they like the, this is from the doctor's opinion. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that when they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That was restless, irritable, discontented. That was my entire drinking career, if you will. And let's see, continued on. Let's see, where am I at my story? Is anybody else nervous here tonight? Yeah, good. Glad I'm not the only one. Yeah. So got my first DUI at 19, and then continue on drinking, never thinking that alcohol was a problem. Did a geographical, moved up here around 2006, and got into some more trouble, and then moved back home to San Diego. To my parents' house, and you know, back to that was one thing that was shared in a earlier meeting. Their parents had put a restraining order out on them, and it really made me think, how would my life be different if my parents actually put their foot down and cut me off? Instead, they brought me back into their home, nurtured me in the only loving way that they knew how. They thought they were just trying to help. And it just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Enabled, thank you. It just enabled me even more and more and perpetuated my alcoholism. I got a second DUI. My parents got divorced, and it was something that I think I saw coming, and I just started to drink at that as a problem, just, you know, something else to drink at. And shortly after the divorce, I found my mother. She attempted suicide. I walked in on her, and she had a note written, empty bottle pills, and had a very faint pulse. And that was just one other thing that I just continued to drink at. Then I got into a little bit more serious trouble, an assault charge, and I was carrying a 10-year sentence. I only did about 5 months in county, and then I had that suspended sentence sitting over my head. My mother ended up selling the house, and me, her and grandmother all moved out, did a geographical out to Las Vegas, and continued to get myself into trouble. I was still on probation at that time, continued to drink, got caught with alcohol, and that terminated the interstate compact that I was on. So I was supposed to go back to San Diego to report, continued drinking, and was just going back to report, and the judge rolled up 3 violations and gave me the 10 years. And I went upstate to prison, and it was the first time I had ever been free. It's really weird saying that and hearing myself say that being locked up probably saved my life, almost no doubtly did. The way that I was drinking, using, no care for myself or anything, completely lost. I still spent probably the first 2 years blaming everybody, everything, the courts, the cops, my probation officer that stacked up the violations, my circumstances, everything. And after about 2 years, I kind of just kind of gave up on trying to fight my way out of where I was at and started to focus on myself. Got even more into working out. I got into AA, got into school, got a hold of every self-help book that I could get my hands on to, started doing yoga and meditating. The meditation really helped me a lot locked up in the cell. My anxiety was off the charts before that. And like I said, AA, I got my first taste of it locked up. And I mean, some of the funnest times I've had too were in prison. It was all because I was sober. I got to play the drums on the yard more than once. It was so cool. And I'm not promoting it. but as a very, very amateur musician, to be there and experience that, it was amazing. I cannot describe it. So I paroled at the end of 19, and I was able to transfer my parole out here to the Central Coast, and I had an idea because I had worked the 12 steps not with a sponsor inside, but through a ministry program, so it was via mail, and there wasn't a direct correlation. But I was going to meetings, and so I had an idea of it. Like I said, I worked the 12 steps to the best of my ability at the time, and I had an idea that I had to work through all these past traumas that I had, because I didn't want to relapse into the, you know, I didn't want this bad stuff to keep happening to me. And I still didn't quite realize why it was happening to me. So I got extremely busy when I got out. I was working, you know, 40 plus hours a week. I started college again out here at Hancock. And through there, I got into counseling. So I was seeing a counselor, a therapist, whatever, and did that for about a year as long, you know, as well as all the programs that parole was making me do, anger management and all that sort of stuff. And after about a year, I felt that I had worked through everything and I'm good. I'm in the clear. Thought I fixed my alcoholism, thought I was done. I, you know, had 3-4 years of sobriety at that time. I don't know what my first sobriety date was, which today I probably should have started with that. But my sobriety date is 7/11/24. So I'm getting really close to 18 months here, another 2 weeks or so. So anyway, I've got about 4 years of sobriety at this point, and trying to play catch up with life, trying to do everything. I was working. I was doing school. I just got a girlfriend. You know, I was exercising. I was running a couple miles every morning. I was hiking on the weekends, kayaking, riding my bike, and everything just seemed to be overwhelming at some point. And I don't know quite exactly where it turned, but I know I was not taking care of my spirituality. I was doing a bunch of stuff that you should be doing, like exercising and everything else, but I had no sense of program in here. I had no spirituality. And slowly I felt I needed something. And I had all this stuff, and I'm like, I was turning 40. And I said, you know, I think I'm okay now. I'm not, and had no idea. I didn't think I was gonna drink, but I deserve to smoke some weed. That's okay, right? It's not alcohol. And so that was in March of 22 when I turned 40 and started doing that. And just like my alcohol, it started on the weekends every once in a while. And then it was all weekend and then after work and all day every day. And so, like I said, that was in March. And by Thanksgiving of that year, I went out to Vegas to visit my family, my middle brother and my mother live out there. And had, you know, a great time visiting with them all. And I was sitting talking with my brother right before I went to the airport. And we were talking about my sobriety and how all that was going. And, you know, I said, no, I'm good. I don't want to drink. I have no inkling to, you know, I am smoking a little bit of weed, but no, I'm good, you know, and I felt I was good at that point. Got in the car and went to the airport, went through security, went up to the gate, and they had a beer vendor there. And I went, oh, that sounds good. Give me a beer. That was really good. Give me another one. On the flight home, give me a double jack. You know what, make it two. And I got away with it. I came home, I knew my girlfriend was down in Santa Barbara visiting her family. And I hid it from her. And that's good, I deserve that. And so that continued on a little bit like that. Every once in a while when she was down visiting her mother, I would buy a six pack or whatever, and it just perpetuated. Pretty soon it was, you know, just every once in a while on the weekends, all of a sudden it was not so much hiding it from her. And it was all weekend, and then it was every day after work. Let me share a little something else here. This is from the doctor's opinion as well. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. One symptom is common. A little bit further down after they talked about the different types. One symptom is common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. So, like I said, and I think I skipped a line here, but I wanted to also share on controlled drinking and more about alcoholism. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. All of us felt at times that we're regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Like I said, I continued on and just was drinking every single day. The relationship I was in definitely wasn't right, and I blamed that as the excuse. Was drinking at that as well. I broke up with her, and this was March of 24. And when she moved out, it very quickly, I was already starting to drink in the morning before work, but it very quickly was all day, every day, even at work. Not a real good idea when you work with power tools. And I caught myself a fourth DUI. I remember when I was incarcerated hearing about somebody that had four DUIs, and I was like, how could you do that? When did you just stop drinking? Like, what? You know, it just didn't make sense to me. And here I was with a fourth DUI, deathly afraid of going back to prison, of what would happen to me. All this stuff that I had built since I got out of prison. 3.5 years out of prison, I bought my first house. And it still blows my mind that I was able to accomplish that. And it was very close to all just being wasted away because I couldn't stop drinking. And when I left jail and I was walking home, I started praying out of desperation, like we often do. Just please, God, help me. Like I said, I'd probably been a little suicidal before the DUI. I wanted it all to end. I wanted to just all these bad things to stop happening to me. These bad feelings that were I was constantly having, this indifference that I felt. It just felt like I was in this perpetual machine. Just wake up, drink so that I could stop shaking, I could stop throwing up, I could brush my teeth, I could get to work, get through work just so I could drink some more and go to sleep. It's just rinse and repeat constantly. But then after the DUI, my suicidal thoughts were scary to me, to say the least. I had everything planned out, you know, and I even been through, oh, well, you're going to hurt all your family and this and that. And I'd been down that road before, and that's often what had stopped me before. I had walked that through, and I can't do that to my mother. I can't do that to any of my family. And this time it was, it'll be one last time and the pain will stop. It will stop her from hurting, from seeing me drink the way that I do. It'll stop the pain that I have inside of me. And it will be over. That's all I really wanted. Just all, everything just stop. And something told me that I had to get back into AA. Over my relapse, it was about a 2-year period. I had missed work a little bit, and the boss brought me into to AA, and I met some of you guys there. I definitely remember Lee. And so after the DUI, I went back to the factory meeting. That's my home group right there. That's where I got real honest and felt most at home. And like I said, just prayed for guidance. I went back into the rooms. My anxiety was off the wall, and through praying, I felt that start to lift. Thanks to my sponsor, which I got very early on. I normally would have dodged it, but I was so done with everything, I didn't have any stamina left to say no. So when my sponsor came up and said, I'll be your temporary sponsor, I say, okay, yes, sure. Tell me what to do, because I don't know anymore. Go to a meeting. And I was voluntold to get a commitment. And I think I had, especially that first year, a commitment at every single meeting that I went to. On top of that, I was doing, you know, my DUI class. And that was another thing, too. I went to my probation officer because I knew I needed mental help. I needed something very, very bad. And they directed me to the Good Samaritans, to Recovery Point, and got into a program there because that was the closest thing to mental health that I could get. My health insurance at the time didn't cover mental health. And so I went there and I found a lot of help. And a lot of it was, you know, seeing other people that were in the same boat that I was. And also through the Good Samaritans, I went and I was able to get on a medication to help me out. A what? Cannabis? I'm not sure what it was, but it was, yeah, it was thank you, antidepressant. Yes. I needed that very severely those first few months. That helped keep me stable. And by going to meetings, I was able to keep busy. I couldn't go home after work and be in an empty house and not think about drinking. So going to meetings helped severely. Those commitments kept me tied to going to those meetings and made me feel a part of. Another part I would like to share here. This is well from the doctor's opinion. More often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he has then a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer. And it took me a few months, I would say, before I really started to hear the message, before my mind and body cleared of the alcohol, and I heard my story in other people, that they went through the same things that I had been through. And I started to feel even more and more part of. And from then on, just I continued to go to meetings. It wasn't easy at first. The step work I often do at the speed of pain when it's absolutely necessary. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Powerless? I just like to drink. How am I powerless? There's a lot of ego stuff there for me. And that our lives had become unmanageable. I never knew what managing life was before. My whole life, I didn't have any of these skills lined out for us in the 12 steps. I couldn't told you, I felt I was doing fine. I bought a house, I did this and that, and yeah, everything else. I didn't realize how unmanageable it was. The fourth step was also a big one for me, and I was stuck on it. I wanted to, kind of like when I first got out of prison and I went to counseling because I wanted to get through all my past history. I got hung up on the fourth step because I wanted to make sure everything was out in the open. And I felt that I was missing something. I felt that I was repressing something. And it dawned on me one day, I'm alcoholic. That's what I've been feeling my entire life. It was this feeling of indifference, feeling of inadequacy, my entire life. That's what it was. And it just kind of like, aha, for me. Spiritual awakenings. In the back, spiritual experience. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. So not everybody has one big, huge awakening. For me, there was a lot of spiritual experiences along the way. Early on, like I said, the lifting of my anxiety, I saw the power in God. And I hear God through you guys. Early on in sobriety, I was also working out of town. And I was on a routine at that point where I'd wake up and I'd pray and I'd do a little bit of reading and go about my day. But I was missing meetings because I wasn't at my regular home group. And I'm driving to work and I'm just going through in my head. And I just, God, please help. And within a minute, I get a text from a fellow in the group, and he sends me a daily reflection. Not every day. Sometimes it's every 3 days, and he'll stack them up like three in a row. And like I said, within a minute of that prayer, a text comes through, and it was exactly what I needed to hear. And often in meetings, somebody will share something, and it would just be a light coming on in me. Just recently, I got my base pass back for Vandenberg. I got access for that, which is a big, big thing for me and the work that I do. And I was driving to there, and I'm getting close, and I'm worried about it. Because I'd already been through the gate once, but then there's something, you know, I'm flagged at one of the other entities, and so they pulled me over, and they eventually they're like, okay, yeah, you're good to go. But as I'm driving up there, and I'm just in my head just spinning, and it was like one of those aha moments. It was like, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And it's just calmness came over me. And, you know, everything's fine. It's in God's time, whatever happens. And let's see. So a lot of those commitments that I got early on have expired. The last year, I still go to all those meetings plus some. When those commitments were coming up, I was talking to a fellow in the group. I'm thinking about, you know, once my commitment ends, I'm going to start, you know, venturing out and checking out different groups and everything. He said, no, don't do it. If anything, add a meeting. Like, how can I do that? I'm already doing like 7 meetings a week. And then right after that, we started the Young and Sober meeting at Coast Any Length. And then I got my other commitment. So I don't say this to brag, but I'm doing like 10 meetings a week now. And that's like every single week, 8 to 10, depending on the week. And I was doing probably 4 or 5 when I first started. And that's what I need to do to stay sober, to stay in the middle state. So like I said, I secretary a meeting. I still have monthly commitments at our speaker meetings. I do as much H&I as I can. When called upon, I say yes. I don't say no in AA. Share a little something else here. So this is Into Action. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way that we have outlined. But that is not all. There's action and more action. Faith without works is dead. And I see that in my sponsor over the last year and a half. He's got decades of sobriety, and he's still growing. I've seen him change in the last year and a half, and it's inspiring. There is no end game for this. This program is completely perpetual. It's a word I'm looking for, progressive, just like our disease. I think I'm gonna end with this, a little something that my friend Big John shared, and it definitely spoke to me. Acceptance was the answer. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept my life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need the concentration, not so much on what needs to be changed in the world, as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. And with that, I thank you for letting me share tonight. My name is Cody. I'm out.
Cody, another round of applause. All right. Thank you, Cody, for speaking tonight.